Hey,
All right,
what's
go
up,
ahead.
fellow people? What's up? My name is Natasha Wallington, and you just heard me on the Dope Science Show. Have a good day, y'all.
Awesome.
My name's Damien Swaby, and I'm here on the Dope Science Show, the best podcast out there today.
Okay, this is Dave Beck, and I've been on a Dope Science Show with the dopest girl I've ever known in my life, Ben Diego. And her name is, say it again.
Science Stuff with Steph.
Science Stuff with Steph. That's right. She's a great, great, great lady, guys. I hope you tune into her show. And
hey there, everybody. This is Maya Anika, visual artist and mental health advocate and speaker of the Spectrum blog, here with Stephanie at the Dope Science Show. And you should be here, too. Go Steam!
Yeah!
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Dope Science Show. This is Science Stuff with Steph, also known my real name, Stephanie Lowe. I am so excited. I have my good friend Paul on the show. He has a PhD in computer science, and he's only 26. That's pretty impressive. And it was a really good talk where we just casually talk about life, what it was like going through that journey, how did he get where he is now, and just some of the challenges that he faced, as well as his dreams and goals. It was a pretty fun conversation. I recorded it a couple of months ago. But, you know, I get things out as soon as I can, and I just put them where they are. This show's kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of like art in a way. I don't know. Anyways, it's a great show. At the end, I actually squeezed in a follow-up because Paul just walked. And so he got to do his cap and gown just like this week. And I wanted to get his feedback on how that went and how that felt. So that's towards the end. Hey, you guys, I really appreciate you listening. And thank you, thank you, thank you for reposting and sharing. Please, please reach out to me whenever you feel like it. I want to hear from you. It's like, kind of like a vacuum otherwise. But anyways, let's start the show.
Hey, welcome to the Dope Science Show. Hey, guys, this is my cool friend, also known as One Cool Blurred, a.k.a. Dr. Paul McNeil. He is a really awesome guy. I was following online. I don't remember how I saw you on Instagram, but I read your bio. I'm like one of those people who read bios. And I saw engineer, programmer, mathematician, nomad, entrepreneur, music lover, adventurer, and it goes on and on. And I was like, wow, that's cool, because I was really looking for, like, people of color who are into science and tech stuff, and there you were. So
wow.
I wanted to, like, stalk you for a second so I could find out more about your experience with, you know, how you have a PhD. Like, what? Aren't you, like, 22 or something?
26.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm a little more grown.
Awesome.
Yeah, cool. I'm glad it's cool because, you know, you make those bios and you just like randomly put some things up there, and it's cool that people actually read those. That's nice. I read them.
Well, I do.
Cool. Good times. Yeah. So I just got my PhD from Tennessee State University, and it's in computer and information systems engineering. My concentration was computer networks and communication. And yeah, it just kind of wrapped up. Right. And my research was on cybersecurity. So, and I used like machine learning techniques and apply them to cybersecurity problems for my my actual research. So yeah, cool. Mouthful.
Yeah, I wanted to like dissect some of that. So you're saying like you have a PhD in engineering, and is that like computer engineering? Is it what type of engineering is that?
Cool. So the degree is called Computer and Information Systems Engineering. And it's basically a systems engineering degree. And what we do is we learn how to apply systems engineering principles to different problem sets. So I focus more on the computer problem set, or where mobile security, so Android phones, iPhones, that kind of thing. I focus on the cybersecurity and applying systems engineering as well as machine learning techniques to that. Because my background, I come from a programming background. So.
Cool. So how did you get there? Like, how do you go from, you know, being a, were you always into programming like in high school? Like, how did you get there?
Fun fact. I actually was homeschooled for about 7 years. So I was homeschooled from fifth grade until I went to college. But I, in rebellion in during my high school years, I wanted to go to school and my parents were like, oh, we're going to homeschool you. So I kind of dropped out of homeschool, which is hard to do because you're at home. But I did up to about maybe 10th grade, first semester of 10th grade. And then I kind of just called it quits.
So what does that mean? Like you dropped out of school even though you were homeschooled, so you weren't in school?
Right. So what that means is I went out of my way to make my parents think I was doing assignments that I wasn't doing, and instead I was just watching television.
Okay.
you know, doing other things around town and stuff like that. We lived in a very small town in Texas, and so I would go and sometimes I would volunteer instead of work, and I would just find creative ways to not actually do work. And I eventually, I think I was like, it was close to the time that I guess if I had been on a traditional school track, I would have been going to college. And I realized that I was like, oh, I haven't finished. And so I ended up going and actually getting a GED so that I could go to college. And yeah, so that's kind of how that started. I always had an interest in computers, but no one in my circle knew anything about programming whatsoever. So my idea of programming was editing my MySpace options. I guess that makes me sound old.
You know, that was the intro into programming for like a whole generation.
I like HTML and then later learned that wasn't really a programming language. And I had tried Googling and things of that nature. I just didn't understand how compilers or that you could download these compilers to follow the steps. I'd find steps about C++ and stuff, but I didn't really understand what it was. And my parents, that's not even kind of in their wheelhouse. I just didn't have anybody who dealt with computers other than in more of the IT space. And so I didn't really start coding until I got to college.
Wow. That's such a like roundabout way of getting there because, you know, people think, oh, like getting a GED is somehow, you know, a failure or whatnot. And when you, in the big picture of things, just going to college is like the real school. So however you get there, it doesn't really matter, you know.
Mm-hmm. And when I initially, I had my own hangups because I felt similarly, right? I thought everyone who gets a GED, it's because they couldn't finish high school. And I was like, I'm smart. I can finish high school. I don't need to get a GED. And then one day I realized that I could get a GED and just go to college anyway. And my plan was to never tell anybody that I had a GED. That was the goal. Mm-hmm. So on the test, they'll ask, can we, you know, use you in the future that you have a GED or whatever. I was like, nope. And it was like, Bill Cosby has a GED and all these famous people. And I was just like, nope, no one's ever going to find out. And now, I mean, it really doesn't matter once you get into school and you really just apply yourself and you perform. People look at that performance. It doesn't hold you back at all. It's definitely a solid option.
That's awesome. What a great story. That's so cool. I kind of just found my way in college too, but at least you were like, seemed like, I don't know if you felt like you had nothing better to do or it was just like you had a clear goal. For me, it was more like, I didn't know what else to do. I'm just going to go to college.
Yeah. So in my family, everyone kind of goes to college. And so it was one of those things where it actually wasn't until around the time when I guess I would have been graduating or when I was getting ready to go to college, that some of my friends were not going to college. And I didn't know that was an option in my house. Like from really little, you just knew you were going to go to college probably go and get a master's. It could be in whatever you wanted it to be. The PhD was optional, but it was kind of understood that you were going to go to college and you're probably going to get a master's in my house. Like, that was just kind of the norm. And
that's
so,
cool.
Yeah.
I think because, you know, it gives you a framework of expectations that at least should be getting you a more stable lifestyle, you know, which is what everyone's striving for.
I guess. Yeah, I think so. I mean, because for me, then it became a thing of, what am I doing after high school? I already know. It wasn't, I didn't have that much. The thing, the question I had was, what would my major be? What would I do? So I actually picked my freshman major out of a hat. So, I wrote down on pieces of paper the four different things I was interested in, and I think I did the best 3 out of 5. And I shook up a hat and I pulled it out. And so my first major in college was computer science. And I was like, okay, I'm minoring in math.
Way to make decisions.
I think so.
Indecisive. Like, what a great way. Like, I pulled this. This is fate. This is what I'm doing.
Yep. I'm going to 3 out of 5. Because at the time I was really interested in law. I also thought about being a doctor. And then there was, you know, computer science. And so I thought that those were going to be really amazing things. And I couldn't decide. And so I thought, well, I'll pick something out of a hat. And then if I don't like it, I'll just change my major, you know, the next semester. But at least I'll take some classes towards, you know, one of them. And
go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that. I'm just saying that one little thing was like a life-changing moment for me. Like, whenever someone says something, I'm like, oh, I'm adding this to my life notebook. I'm like, oh, that's what we do now. Yeah. From now on. If I'm having trouble making decisions, it's going in a hat.
I don't know that I would recommend that for anything. I was probably 16 or 17 when I saw it on television. I'd seen it on some episode again. I was like, oh, yeah, people do that. Why not do it now? So it was one
you
of
saw
those.
It on TV?
Yeah. I saw it on TV growing up, and I think a rerun or something came on, and I remembered that. It was like, oh, people do sometimes pick things out of a hat. Why not? And I was like, that would be a really funny story if this ever actually becomes a thing. And so I just pulled it out of a hat and I kind of ran with it. But for me at that point, I just wanted to be at school. So I wasn't really going for education per se. I was really just going to be around people and hang out. That was my main goal when I first went to college.
And when you got there, did you feel like, this is home. I fit in. This is like, you know.
Not at all. So I was a very shy person. And very to myself. A lot of homeschoolers have the stereotype of being very quiet and awkward, socially awkward. And I filled that stereotype a lot going into college. To the point where, like, the first day I was getting ready to go to breakfast, the first day of orientation, and my roommate hadn't moved in yet. So I had the room to myself. And it took me like 30 minutes to come up with 3 questions to ask strangers. Because I just didn't talk to people that I didn't know. And I knew it was something I wanted to work on. And so it was something I had to consciously decide that I was going to improve on. So
I completely relate. I wasn't homeschooled, but I definitely didn't talk to people until they talked to me first. And that could take forever.
I went to college. I went to an HBCU for undergrad, and my family will go there. Generally my
HBCU?
Family, it's kind of like a legacy thing. Yeah, HBCU, historically Black college or university. So
and
I went to Oakwood University.
Oak Ridge?
It's Oakwood, like the tree, like Oakwood. Yeah, and it's in Huntsville, Alabama. It's near Alabama A&M.
That's
awesome. So my family kind of everyone.
HBCU. Sorry, people. I'm sorry. I was going to say, they say that the majority of all, like, degreed people of color and black people especially come from HBCU. As far as our PhDs, our doctors, the majority of them. Did you already know that, or?
I learned that after, after I left. I didn't know that going in. My family, it's kind of like a legacy thing. So everyone in my family generally goes to Oakwood for at least 1 year, and then you can do what you want. And so I just knew I had to go there for like a year. It was just a thing that we did. So I went there initially, and I, like I said, I was really going for the social aspect, and I figured everything else would work itself out. I didn't really have that many goals academically when I first started college.
The whole tradition thing really helped you a lot. That's cool that you guys have that. Like, I guess everyone has traditions, or legacies. And you're just lucky that your legacy was like, oh yeah, everybody goes to college. Yeah, everyone goes to the same college because it's, you know, a great place to go and get started as an adult in life. You know, it makes it more understandable how you're like, oh yeah, I got a PhD in engineering and I'm like 26. So I would say for you, maybe, but I wouldn't say it was easy. I mean, got a GED because you weren't into like, I don't know, you know, the homeschool aspect, and then you decided to go to college, and then, you know, you're like, oh, I'm going to go do this in regards to computers. Did you feel like once you got into the program that, you know, that you just knew what you're going to do? At what point, I mean, you already guided, but I'm saying at what point did you realize, you know, what your niche was? Like, did you just follow your interest?
So undergrad is kind of where I got an idea of what I would need to do. But it definitely was a very roundabout path for me. So I started off computer science, and then I did an internship after my freshman year. There was a program with NASA, because they have a NASA center in Huntsville, Marshall Space Flight Center. And they had a local, I guess, program between some of the local universities and NASA for minority students to get an internship there. And I ended up working in Lockheed Martin tech branch, which was fielding a lot of the IT, had the IT contract for Marshall at the time. And I didn't do that much programming at all. It was a lot of setting up computers, working in a warehouse, things of that nature. And I couldn't stand it. I was like, oh, this is horrible. And so I went back in the fall. And during that time, I was like, yeah, I'm definitely going to be a programmer now. But in a roundabout way, I ended up in a program, this grant. The school got a grant in the biology department for biomedical science research. And they were trying to promote computational biology, bioinformatics, biomedical engineering, things of that nature. So they were collaborating with our department. and I was one of the, I think it was for sophomores, freshmen and sophomores. So I was one of the sophomores who had a GPA that fit what they were looking for. And so the chair of my department kind of ushered me into that direction. So I applied and I was able to get in, and I just learned about a whole different field. And that second summer I went and did some research at Virginia Tech in the field of bioinformatics. And I learned some stuff about, you know, using pipettes and microscopes, but also how they do some of the protein sequence comparisons and things of that nature. And it was during that that I realized that I cared a lot more about like user interface and computer stuff, but I also like the biology aspect. And so my goal became, oh, I really would love to learn how to make software that biologists like to actually use and that works for them. And I noticed that a lot of the top bioinformaticists would have PhDs in biology, but then they would go back and get a master's in computer science so that they could really apply, you know, their biological knowledge and use the computers fully. And so I thought, I was like, well, I don't care as much about biology as I do the computer stuff. So why don't I do this PhD in computers and then just have some biologists tell me what they need me to do? So that became, I guess, my first kind of foray into everything. But what ended up happening was that summer I also realized that I wasn't a huge fan of the computer science program that I was in. And so I ended up switching my major to math. So I flipped it. Before, I was a computer science major and I minored in math, and then I flipped it and I became a math major and I just minored in computer science. And I think that that did a lot for helping me in the way that I just thought about problems. Mathematicians think about things in a very different way than computer scientists, and both of those also think about problems in a different way than an engineer does. They have a lot of similarities. And many people will say, oh, if you're good at one, you're good at the other. But the thought processes are different. And I would learn that later on, like as I went through these different degrees.
I've heard that before, because the thing about math is once you learn the concept, you're most of the time, you're not spending your time doing the calculations, because there's software that can do that for you. It's more understanding what the problem is and what framework you should use to solve the problem, you know. And then so with programming, it's the same scenario. But as a programmer, having that math, it trains you to think as a problem solver, and it probably helps you with recognizing and developing, like, patterns, you know?
Definitely. I think one of the biggest things and one of the challenges I had when I first started up with my master's in computer science, I did not go to an HBCU for my master's. I ended up going to Vanderbilt, actually, in Nashville for my master's. When I got there, I was in a computer science program, but I thought like a mathematician. So like you said, with math, it's about concepts. And so to do your math homework, you kind of study and you think about things. And then when you're doing your assignments and your proofs and stuff, if you can show that you have a firm understanding of the concepts, you can usually get a decent grade. A lot of times the teachers would care about the decimals and things of that nature, but you could still be all right if you showed proper understanding of the concepts and you can discuss it and do those types of theories and understand those theories and things of that nature. And then I get to computer science, where your assignment is the same amount of time as math. But not only do you have to understand all this theory, you also have to create a project or code that compiles and that works. And so initially my studying was, okay, I understand these concepts. I'm going to wait until I understand the concepts fully and study and think about them. And then, you know, in a day or two, I'll just knock out code. And that is the absolute worst way to study for a computer science class. And so I ended up really having to learn to restructure how I thought. So it became, okay, let me kind of get an idea of what needs to happen, and then let's just do it. Let's start working and applying it right away. And so that was like a very that time period, that little, that transitional period, that first semester was actually pretty rough for me. And then it kind of worked out after that, and I started to definitely improve and understand that better. Whereas when I made the jump.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it sounds like when with coding, it's more like you're saying, it was almost like you have to jump in with applying, you know, basically experimenting with some options to get the results you're going for. And it's like you further develop the concept as you're experimenting and applying the code. Is that kind of what you're saying? Like it's more action oriented. Yeah. Then you analyze and twerk it, you know, and then go back.
Right, because when you're learning, a lot of times it's one of those things where you need to have a kind of an understanding of what's going on, but you also have to understand that there's a lot of debugging, because you could have the concept down really well, but you also have to make sure your format's correct. So I may understand this concept, but it'll be like, well, a semicolon that throws off the whole code. Now it doesn't work. Why? And you have to spend your time looking. And so debugging always adds time to whatever code you're about to create. And and then it became a time management issue. So it's, how do I adjust the way that I manage my study time to also understand, but also to produce? And that was definitely something that was different than when I was doing math primarily.
And did you have like any like mentors or anybody who like guided you while you were going through like your education process, you know?
Yeah, definitely. So initially, I think my parents were supportive of school and education. Like they love, my parents are both educators, and so they were huge on stressing the importance of education, whatever the field may be. I would say I feel like I was really fortunate that my parents never pushed me down a particular path. It was just more that you need to pursue a path and go to educate and pick a field, but they didn't actually outline what that field was supposed to be. When I got to college, I had very supportive teachers. That's one thing I can definitely say, the stereotype, and you see it on like A Different World and stuff like that. And the faculty is very supportive in helping you kind of understand. And you can leverage a lot of opportunities at HBCUs if you decide to take advantage of them. Sometimes people will look at fundings or different things of that nature primarily and say, oh, this is why I wouldn't go to a historically Black college or university. And there are some things here and there that could be lacking, but there's often a lot of opportunities there that if you were to really look for it and make an attempt to leverage those, take advantage of those opportunities, you could really go a lot of interesting places and get a lot of really great experiences. So my professors were really great. There was one professor, he was a professor in organic chemistry. I actually never took a class from him, never took a chemistry class while I was in college. And he was just really a really young guy. And he was the first Black person I knew, or Black guy, a man that I knew with a PhD in a hard science that was like early to mid 30s. And so it was like, oh, that's really cool. Okay, this could really be done. Up until that point, a lot of the people that I knew who had PhDs or that I would see with PhDs were in, like in my parents' friends, a lot of times they were in nursing or education or something like that. And then in my department, there were mostly like older people who had them. So it was kind of, it seemed to me at that time, it seemed like a PhD was something you did after you're like 20, 30 or something. You get it like in your 30s, 40s. And it was like at the time, an old person's degree. It wasn't something you really aimed for. Like you did your master's, you worked, and then you're like, I'm going to go back to school now. And that was kind of how my mindset was until I met him. And his name was Dr. Phillips. And he was just really personable, and he was just very approachable. And I would go in his office and really just hang out and talk about anything. Women, girls, I was thinking about and see him helping people with different things. And he was really influential in me actually trying to go to grad school and further in my PhD and so forth. My parents encouraged it, but my personal desire came after I saw how it was like, oh, this is something tangible. Like, I can see you did it.
Right.
And he encouraged me that way. So definitely.
You know, they say representation matters, you know, of what people say is, how can you be something you've never seen, or, you know?
Right. Yep.
That's why we have to be more visible, you know? That's why we have to change the narrative and, you know, so people realize, yeah, Black people, people of color, women, we're in science, we're in math, we're, you know, we're educators, we're inventors, you know? We do these things.
Yeah, definitely.
You know?
Yeah, there's definitely a narrative to be changed. And I think that, as you said, you know, it's a real fight. Like, it's hard to imagine things. There was actually a study. I wish that I could remember the actual statistic. And it just had to do with women in math. And they were talking about the self-efficacy and how girls who saw women who were good at math and who saw women for succeeding in those areas, that they were more likely to try harder at math and to succeed in those ways. And so I think that can be said for, like you said, for anything, whether it's race, gender, culture. It has to do with seeing that that is a tangible option, and you can do things without seeing it, but it definitely helps. And so for me, that's definitely the truth. It really influenced how I ended up pushing through. Because I knew I wanted to be stronger in coding, that's why I went straight through to the master's. And then once I was in and I got further, I guess, exposure to the world of research and academia, and also peer pressure. That's something that I don't know that as many people will say influences their decision to become get a PhD or become a doctor. But because I was a part of that biomedical program in undergrad, a lot of my closest friends were going to med school or dental school. And one day I realized in undergrad, I realized that most of my friends in the future are going to be doctor, and I will be the only mister at the table, and I don't want to do that.
I love it.
And so then it became, okay, well, I don't want to go to med school. I don't want to go to dental school. I guess I can do a PhD. I guess that's a thing I can do. So a lot of my things have been very roundabout or very, let's just see what happens. And then as it progresses, definitely a lot of work, a lot of late nights. My master's, at one point, I think I averaged like 2 or 3 hours of sleep a night. Which I wouldn't recommend to anybody, but there was just so much work to do, and I had so many things, concepts to catch up on, that I just ended up, some nights I would stay in lab working with one of my friends. We would stay there all night, like 6 a.m., go to the parking garage, sleep in my car for like an hour, 3 hours, go to class, and then go home, shower, come back, and go to another class. And so it definitely, I don't want to oversimplify, I guess, the journey. But so there are definitely moments where it was like, why am I doing this? But it became the outcome, you know, on the other side, it was definitely, definitely worth it. I think another influence was also then just like, I had a lot of mentees. I was really involved in undergrad, and so there were people that I knew were looking at me kind of the way that I looked at Dr. Phillips, and so that kind of encouraged me. That's one of the reasons why I call myself the real life Dwayne Wayne, because there's that episode where he's thinking about going for the job, and he stays in grad school so he can keep teaching the kids, and it was one of those things.
Yeah, I remember that.
There were so many times when I was ready to just kind of call it quits and just go get a job. And then somebody who was still at Oakwood would contact me and say, man, this opportunity just came up, and every time I see your Facebook post or I look at your Instagram, and I'm just like, oh, I can do it too, and I can't wait to like try to get my master's also and things of that nature. And that definitely kept me going when there were times when I was just like, yeah, this is, I'm done. I don't need to do this. Why am I here? So definitely
you know what? The community definitely is like your peers, you, that whole thing. You are the average of the five people that you spend the most time with, you know? So if all your peers are going to be doctors and you're sitting at the table like, I don't want to be the only doctor. And then you're like, all right, let's do this, you know? And even though it was hard, you know, you have sacrificed. That's just part of the journey. Like, accomplishing it, don't you get a high? Don't you get, like, you know, a sense of, like, you know, the challenge is actually fulfilling, even though it's a struggle, you know?
Yeah.
Or at least that's how I see things.
When I'm in the struggle, not at all. After the struggle, it's fulfilled.
After the struggle.
It's the hardest thing ever. And it's one of those things where they'll say, oh, the time, the years will fly by. 3 more years, 4 more years. It's not that long, trust me. And then you start the first semester and you felt like the first semester lasted 2 years of your life. I think that a lot of times we romanticize the struggle on the other side, which is cool. But I vividly remember my first semester in grad school and how long it felt. I can say now, looking back on, you know, 5 years from when I left, I can say, oh, you know, it didn't feel like that long at all. The time flew by. But when you're actually in it, oh man, it is the longest thing ever. But once you persevere and you continue, just it works out. It works itself out. And I definitely think that if that's your goal, and whenever you're able to accomplish a goal, it definitely feels amazing.
Did you suffer or experience any like depression or anxiety while you were in school? I mean,
yes.
You know, that's one of the biggest challenges of in life, period. But when you're like trying to accomplish something, it's even, you know, more poignant.
Yeah. So I definitely, I think I just did experience a little bit of depression, but I didn't know that that's what I was experiencing. So until later. And so I've always just kind of been a relaxed kind of guy. I mean, I can be intense about what I'm passionate about, but for the most part, you know, I kind of just try things and see what happens. And it got to a point where I was just didn't feel like I was, that the outcome of all of my efforts was matching the level of effort I put in. And so that kind of, I didn't realize, put me in a very like low place to where, you know, I was just like, oh, I don't want to go to class today. And well, I'm just going to lay here an extra day. I don't want to get up. And there are a lot of different things that I was dealing with at that time. But I just thought that, you know, it just had to do with me needing to be more disciplined or something. And I didn't think about it until later. I was having a conversation with some friends. And different people were saying, you know, I've been really depressed lately. I don't want to get out of bed. And in my head, I'm like, oh, man, that's horrible. And they were starting to say all these different symptoms that I was feeling, and they were connecting it to depression. And after that conversation, I remember walking away thinking, am I depressed? And I was like, I don't get depressed, though. Like, that's not a thing that I do, is it? And so I think that it was definitely one of those things where we have to have an awareness of our emotional states, and but also of having balance. I wasn't very balanced. Like I said, I was doing like 20, 21, 22 hour days sometimes for extended periods of time. I wasn't really taking time to exercise or just do fun hobbies. Like everything I did was just focused around school and schoolwork and assignments and research and stuff like that. And it wasn't a very healthy balance. And when we become very unbalanced like that, it's easy for us to become depressed or to become unhealthy, you know? So
right.
It was one of those.
So what did you do? Did you do anything for self-care? Did you kind of just like live through it, and did you do anything actively to try to help yourself with your depression?
Sure. So by the time I realized what I had gone through, I was already, I want to say, kind of over the depression. But mm-hmm. I guess intuitively, I was doing certain things to self-care. I just didn't realize that that's what I was doing. So one of the things that I would do, I would go. So Oakwood is in Huntsville and Vanderbilt is in Nashville. So they're only like an hour, hour and a half away. So what I used to do is on the weekends, I would go hang out with all my friends who were now seniors or now juniors or whatever, because they moved up after I left. I would go and hang out with them, and everything would kind of seem right with the world, because it was a familiar environment. It was people that, you know, were joking about things that I liked, and it was almost as though I didn't left. And I ended up doing that almost every weekend. So it was almost as though I hadn't left. And I didn't realize how much just having that community around me at that time was really helping me, you know, make it through each week. And that's a mm-hmm. thing that people can do to come out of depression. Again, because I didn't know or realize I was depressed. I just thought that I was, I don't know, not performing well, and that had me down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I did those types of things. I also looked into time management, because that seemed to be something that was leading to the stress of my efforts, and I felt like I was spending too much time on certain things. And so they actually on campus had a center for, I guess, helping you with school and if you have test anxiety and things of that nature, which prior to grad school, I didn't have test anxiety, but I developed it in grad school. So I went to learn ways to manage my time better and to be able to deal with the test anxiety I had developed. And as a result of doing those two things, I think that really helped me to make it through that period. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing was just leaving the environment. Vanderbilt's a great school, love it. But I think that due to just my personal needs, it was good for training me, but in terms of certain lifestyle things and stuff, I think that when I went to Tennessee State, I was able to just really find a better fit
mm-hmm.
In a That's sub-community. Cool. Yeah, so
basically,
I think,
you know, you did things out of intuitively and also mm-hmm. like solution-oriented. You're like, okay, I recognize I get stressed because my time management's off. Like, I'm not happy in this actual environment. Being aware of yourself and being solution-oriented seems to have helped you a lot.
Yes, definitely. Self-awareness, I think, is like a very major key to success. I even as I've like now this past couple of months, one of the things that I've really got into is looking at different really successful entrepreneurs, and it just seems like they're all very self-aware, and they're also very confident in their abilities and in their decisions. They kind of stick to it. And so that's been something that I've noticed, a pattern I've noticed, and I just trying to be more conscious of making sure that I exhibit or, you know, those qualities. So it was really cool to even realize in retrospect, oh, I was being self-aware in these particular situations.
Right. And being self-aware of feeling the anxiety and the pain as well. A lot of people, you know, instead of doing that, they don't know what to do. So, you know, they self-medicate or distract themselves with things that actually separate themselves from their self-awareness. And so it's just good to hear the value of, hey, don't drown your sorrows. Actually, yeah. Like, work on trying to actually feel good, you know. Get up, dance, go do something. And not just because, hey, that's the Boy Scout way to do things, but because of the being in touch with yourself will actually lead you in the direction you're trying to go in, you know.
This my song. Said that all things are working for my good. Yeah, yeah. Cause he's intentional. Never failing. I know that all things are working for my good. Yeah, cause he's intentional. Yes, he is. Never fail. You say, all things.
All things are working for my good.
Cause he's intentional. Oh.
I wanted to say, when you were talking about how you're going into, you know, your collaboration with biology and programming, I'm always reading about, like, biotechnology because it intrigues me. The other day, I read this article about DNA. So, you understand how DNA is, you know, constructed. It looks like a double helix, like a twisted rope ladder. That's what I always see it described as. And if you can visualize that. And then those forces that hold the rods and the ladder and the helix or two sides together are hydrogen, right, as well as forces that are moving in parallel and perpendicular like directions. Anyways, long story short is they were finally able to like observe those forces at a cellular or I don't know what type of level, but super, super small scale, and they were actually able to right. measure them for the first time. And they also observed that they the forces spontaneously break apart, and then the DNA is open for a second, and then it closes, milliseconds, and they haven't figured out what pattern, so it seems to be spontaneous, but of course there's some sort of pattern. And the reason why that's cool is because they want to be able to use those mechanisms to make, build nano machines that are, you know, bio machines.
Yeah.
And so there's someone who has to write the software. So they have to write software in order to program these machines to build and interact the way they want to. Mm-hmm. So in the future, you never know. You might be building, like, I don't know, mutant, like, spiders. You'll be doing, like, the interface of, okay, I don't want, you know, you'll be doing all kinds of things. Maybe you'll write a program that kills, like, cancer cells or something like that. And you'll tell the DNA, hey, break apart here and do it here and so on.
That'd be
you
dope.
It would be dope.
That's really cool. Because, and it's so interesting, like, because I haven't read that particular article, but I do know that even in, like, cybersecurity, the relationship also goes the other way, the inverse, in terms of, a lot of times when you look at viruses or solutions to viruses that are out there, people will look to nature, to biology, to kind of figure out ways of spreading, you know, their virus or to trying to mitigate it in code. So there was a study that I read maybe a year and a half ago. Where they were looking at the ways that bees spread pollen, and I believe they were using that similar approach to spread a virus. I think it was in terms of like how bees spread pollen by taking some from something a little bit from here and taking it to the next flower, and what is that called? Is it cross-pollination? And so kind of doing a cross-pollination attacks within, I can't remember if it was in terms of mobile or actual desktops, but that was something where I thought that was really interesting that you're like, they're looking at nature and kind of mimicking those patterns. And so I think it's really interesting. I think it's going to be a really wonderful symbiotic relationship between those two fields moving forward.
Definitely. And the more we know, the more to me, it seems like the more it's like it blurs the line between what we consider natural and what we consider man-made or artificial. Because once you're able to build things at a biological level from DNA, there's no way to undetect, what's natural from what isn't, unless you're able to do some sort of analysis at the DNA level. And the fact that nature so closely resembles the things that we're able to build now, to me, because I always end up going down like the rabbit hole of thoughts, it makes me think, well, science over and over to me proves or argues that there was some sort of creator that created things. Because if we can do it, something had to have done it. and I can't say what or who, with any clear certainty, because, I'm just a human. But to me, it's like it comes back over and over, and we're like, oh, see how perfect nature already works? And then we kind of are just copying what we see in nature and applying it to different things. You can create a virus, and then we have viruses that we see in nature. Like, at what point, what is natural and what isn't,
Wow. Yeah, it's really interesting. I think that there's intelligent design, definitely. And, that's a really interesting thought.
Yeah, I just thought about that. I think about that kind of stuff. Because artificial intelligence is something that I think about a lot, as well as just like bioengineering and writing program that translates into some sort of biological form. And biological doesn't necessarily mean living, breathing. It just means make some DNA. And wood is a bio matter, So. But, so that's what I was thinking about. I'm kind of rambling. But before we end the show or anything, I always like to ask people, what three songs would you want to use to be the soundtrack of this podcast? And you have to tell me right now.
What three songs would I want to be the soundtrack of this podcast?
Yep, this episode.
For this episode, based on what we talked about, or
based on whatever comes to mind, like what feel do you want to have? So there you go.
A different world theme song.
Okay, but yeah.
The second season, though, not the first one.
Okay.
Let's see, what else? Three. Wow, this is hard because I really like.
I know.
This is not a fun question.
You have to, because it's going to make you just do like your innate thoughts, because you don't have enough time to
like. What is that song? The Daft Punk song. It's like Technology. I think Kanye West sampled it. The Faster, okay. Stronger.
Yeah,
I'll get that. Yeah, that one. And then a third. What would be the third one? Oh, that gospel song by is it Tavis? Travis? I think it's called Intentional. I've been listening to that a little bit.
Intentional by Travis?
I'm going to see if I can.
Oh, Google it.
I can pull it up really quickly because I know that. It's called Intentional, but I can't think of the guy's name. Yeah, Travis Green with an E.
Okay. Travis Green. I'm excited. I love hearing other people sing that. Cool.
So those are the three songs that I think of based on our discussion for today.
That's awesome. And then, what else do I always ask people? Oh, yeah. So I want to use your voice for the intro for the next show. So you just introduce yourself, you know your name, and that you're on the Dope Science Show, and then you can ad-lib if you like, or just leave it at, like, I'm such and such, and I'm on the Dope Science Show.
Oh. Oh, yay. Okay, I can do one of those. That sounds fun. Okay. Don't do the oh, yay part. That's not cool. I gotta sound cool. Edit that out, please. Okay. my name is One Cool Blurred, or Dr. Paul McNeil, and I'm on the Dope Science Show, where we talk about changing the narrative and making science dope for people of color.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And then the next time we talk, I mean, we can talk about Hello Cupid and, like, web series and changing the narrative, like, with content.
Yeah, definitely. That would be definitely an amazing. I would love to do that. Yeah, we got to set that up. Definitely.
And where can people find you if they want to follow you and stuff?
Oh, right. I should include that. Should that be in the? That should be in the intro, huh? I can re-say the intro.
Okay. You can redo it. Yeah.
I'll redo the intro. I'll redo right now at like an hour. All right. All right. Hold on. I got to get in. Intro mode. Hi, my name is One Cool Blurred, and I'm on the Dope Science Show with Steph, and we're talking about changing the narrative in technology and making coding dope for all minorities. You can find me at...
I interrupted. Say it again. I don't usually let people say it over and over again.
And then I can say the other stuff in a different way. Well, if you wanted to find me, you could follow me on Snapchat, Twitter, and Instagram, One Cool Blurred. That's Black Nerd smushed together, B-L-E-R-D, not Bird. One Cool Blurred. And also my name will be the real Dwayne Wayne on there. And definitely follow me, message me. I believe I'm on Periscope too, but I don't use it as often. But yeah, definitely. And I think I'm on Musical.ly now. I just started on Musical.ly.
But you're on Musical.ly? I saw that the other day. I think I should get on that.
it was just really random. I don't know how often I use it yet, so you might not have to include that part. But definitely I'm on Snapchat, Instagram, and Twitter as One Cool Blurred. And I share tech stuff. I share random things that make me laugh. I share... different projects I may be working on randomly. I travel a lot, and then I also do a lot of food things. So travel and food is probably going to be the mainstay of a lot of the things that I put up soon, because I'll be traveling a lot in the next couple of months.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, and I can live vicariously. Travel food.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, and my email is scrunchedtech@gmail.com. Or onecoolblurred@gmail.com if you want to talk to me about cybersecurity stuff or biomed software, or you work in a lab and you just want someone to help code some stuff. Scrunched Tech, that's scrunchedtech@gmail.com. But okay. If you just message me on my Instagram, then you could also get that.
I'll put everything in the notes, too, so people will be able to do it.
Dope, dope, dope.
Well, very, very cool. All right. Well, I guess I will talk to you soon. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. It was fun.
Yay! All right. Talk to you later.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, you guys. Don't forget, I had to add a extra little follow-up bonus to this episode. So after the music break, it'll be the closer of the show. So, all right, bye. Work it faster, makes us stronger than ever. After hour, work is never over. Work it harder, make it better. Do it faster, makes us stronger than ever. After hour, work is never over.
Hey, are you there?
Hey, I'm here. What's going on?
You sound great. So crystal clear. Yay!
cool.
Hey, I'm so happy for you that you got the walk. You look so good and so happy. I'm really, really happy for you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Do you still have your high from walking across the stage, or are you kind of in shock?
Nah, I didn't really get too shocked about it. I wasn't really, I guess, feeling it until I was about to walk across the stage, and they were getting ready to call my name. Before then, because I actually got the diploma, I finished in August, and then got my diploma sent to my parents' house back in October. So I've kind of just, okay, I'm done. And I was walking for my family and my friends. So, you know, it was just kind of like, all right, let's do this. And true story, they told us that we couldn't get up to go like to the bathroom or anything. So I had like made sure to go to the bathroom twice before it started and everything like that. Get up there. They had all the PhD students sit on the very front row. It's like almost 500-600 graduates, but all the doctoral students sit on the front row. And we get about 20 minutes, 30 minutes into the graduation, and I have to go to the bathroom. So I actually spent a majority of the graduation just like hoping that I could hold out a little longer. So when I got time to like go to the stage and like we're getting up to walk, I'm just like, yeah, I really don't want to embarrass myself when I go up there to get hooded and start leaking all over the floor, because that will not be cool.
Yeah, that wouldn't happen.
It was very bad. Well, because the program took about 2 hours, and I needed to go to the bathroom after like 25 minutes. So I thought I was going to die. But no incidents happened, and as soon as we got out, I like bulldozed through people to get to the bathroom. So it worked out. I wasn't the only one. There's a couple of us just beelining to the bathroom. So it was cool.
That was like the big emotional moment. It was like when you got to use the bathroom. You're like, yeah.
Yeah, finally. At last. This is why we're here. but yeah, so it was a good time. They didn't really stream it online, which I thought they were going to. So I had shared the link where they normally stream it. So that wasn't cool. But my brother actually did a Facebook Live on his Facebook. So some people did get to see it. So that was pretty cool. Yeah.
Technology. So they didn't have that when I was in school. Man.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I was glad that I got to do something. I wanted to do Periscope with my phone, but they got really mad when I tried to snap and stuff. So I only got one picture off from the front row.
Lame. I guess I could see why, because then like the audience would just see a bunch of people like doing selfies and Snapchats. And
right.
Annoying to watch.
I was like, but how am I supposed to take a selfie with the president when I get my diploma? I was like, I'm not an old doctoral student like these other people. I'm all young and youthful.
Oh, yeah. I forgot.
I want to do millennial stuff.
I forgot about that. Everybody else is older, right?
Yeah, for the most part. As far as I know, I could be wrong. I didn't really interview all the other people there.
Yeah. I forgot you were the young one.
I think so.
I'm young. Let me be young and walk across stage like a young man.
Yeah. But it was all right. It worked out pretty well. They actually selected the picture of me getting hooded for the university Instagram to show the grad school portion. So I was very hyped about that.
Did you repost it?
I did, actually.
I might have seen it. Maybe I didn't know that was it. I'll have to look. I'm going to nominate you to get a Hillman Care package.
Oh, thank you. That would be super dope.
I'm going to. I'm going to nominate a few people I think would be awesome, but you'll be my first nomination.
Thank you. I appreciate it. That'd be so amazing. Yeah, I love I love the product. Like, I had the shirt on under my shirt.
I know. That was so dope. I was jealous.
Yeah, I was like, I thought about it. I was like, oh, I'm gonna do this Superman pose. No one's gonna, mm-hmm. no one else is gonna do that. It'll be a little different. And yeah, so I, but I wanted to have something on that just was like different, underneath, and it just allowed me to kind of privately celebrate like the influence that that amazing show of A Different World really had. And somebody hit me up and was like, why didn't you wear something from like your undergrad school or something like that? And I was like, well, A Different World was like my first introduction to HBCU life and to engineering and college and all that stuff. And so even though I was younger, like it had a very huge influence on me, clearly, even when I didn't know what it was. So I thought it would be really cool. And then everyone knows that I go by the real life Dwayne Wayne moniker. So it just, I felt like it just solidified things. And I have a little, I have had a pair of the flip ups.
I know.
To, you lock it in.
You look good. Yay. I was excited. Nominate me too, because I want some Hillman stuff too. Like,
oh, definitely. Yeah. I got you. We'll cross promote together.
Yes, definitely, because they said nominate as many people as you want. So I figured I cross promote as many dope people as I thought might like it.
Yeah, so. Definitely. I would love it. I would love a hoodie now. I have a t-shirt. I want the hoodie. I would love the hoodie and cool, whatever else they send.
Yeah.
So,
tell me about your new business.
Oh, yeah, man. I'm doing so many different things.
Which one do you want to promote?
I think what we'll talk about today would just be my One Cool Blurred stuff. So okay. I've been doing online tutoring for different languages, Java and Python, different things like that, just helping people get through their intro classes, high school AP, computer science, and stuff like that. So I've been doing some online tutoring. So if anybody is really interested in getting some help, getting through their assignments or learning a new language or working on some programs, they can just email me at onecoolblurred@gmail.com, or they can, send me a DM. But I think that the way the DMs work, sometimes I don't always get the ones from people I don't know, but they can definitely, mm-hmm. Message me or something like that. So I'm doing that. I'm also working on content in terms of academic coaching to kind of help people. I get a lot of questions regarding how do I get, through college, how do I get to grad school, how do I navigate the situation, how do I mm-hmm. best plan. And so I also do some academic coaching now, as well as I'm working on these videos that I'm putting together that just kind of talks about, just different aspects of grad school and coding and navigating the networking scene. So that's
wonderful. Yeah. You know why that's super dope? Because everybody I interview who's doing well, who made it in the field that they wanted to get into as far as STEM or any, endeavor that they've been successful in, they all say they had a mentor or a coach. And one of the questions is, how do I find one? And being able to hire one, I know that can seem, expensive depending on whatever your budget is, but it's definitely an investment. I would have loved to have like a coach when I was in school who can help me through the process, because I was the first, pretty much a first generation college student, and I just
That's cool.
Bumbled my way through like, so what do I do next? What do I do? Like, I barely made it. And and it was mainly just because I just didn't know what I was doing or who I could talk to. So I'll definitely promote that. Sorry, there's like background
No, actually, you're very clear. Like, it's actually pretty quiet.
Oh, sweet. I'm like by an airport.
Yeah, now there's a plane. It was quiet before. But no, I think that having somebody in your corner to help you just kind of set up your academic plan and understand like the importance of different internships or, just different places to plug in I guess plug yourself into is really important, mm-hmm. because for me, I was like the first person really in my family to pursue technology in this particular way. So I had a lot of people in my family who went through college and so forth. Like, their contacts for the most part were in the humanities or, you know, nursing or something like that, which isn't bad. It gave me a framework, but there were still a lot of different things that were different. And then also coming in on the tail end of a lot of my family being younger, the younger cousin and things of that nature, one of the younger cousins, things had changed. So a lot of the requirements, like, it was no longer okay to just do good in school and you're fine. Like, you know, there are additional things that you need to do, you know, internships and some other things. So definitely being able to help people in that kind of way is something that I'm really excited about. Increasing, you know, just increasing the number of Americans that are working in tech and in cybersecurity. Definitely something that I'm very passionate about, in addition to some of the other stuff that I'm working on. But yeah.
That's dope. I'm really excited for you. Let me know if I can help you, if I can promote you, feedback on your website, you know, a simple landing page. Maybe you should do, like, I'm just talking, but maybe you should do for your pricing, like a flat fee per quarter or semester, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I'll let you work it out off the record. But that's just an idea, like packages, that type of thing.
Yeah. So I actually have a couple of packages. I even have some packages together for tutoring. So, like, if you set up, like, you know, a certain number of tutoring sessions, you pay for them in advance, there's some discounting and things of that nature. So I actually have a couple of packages together. The website, I'm actually redoing my One Cool Blurred website right now. So that's why I suggest that it's email is the best right now, but the new website will be coming by the end of this month. So pretty excited about that.
Yay! And you'll end the year strong.
Oh, definitely. I'm definitely ending the year gearing up with a lot of new initiatives. I'm going to have a little web series thing coming out soon, like those video clips, and it should be really fun. And hopefully you'll be able to be one of my guests, so I'm pretty hyped about that.
I'd love to.
Cool. good times.
Sweet. Well, I appreciate your time. I'm going to go ahead and, like, end where right here as far as what I'll put in.
Well, that is the end of the show. I hope you guys enjoyed the show. You feel inspired. You see that with hard work, you know, the right people around you and focus, sacrifice, all that good stuff, you can get anything you want. And congrats again to Dr. Paul McNeil for reaching your goal and getting a PhD in computer science. And the next show, you guys, is my friend Richard Wright. He's in a hip-hop group called The People Next Door. He's super interesting. He's funny. He's kind of, if you've seen Atlanta, he kind of reminds me of the main character, where he's kind of like hippie, he's smart, he's a rapper. And we have a lot of fun talking about chameleons and, like, morphing into other beings. Anyways, thanks, you guys, and I'll talk to you soon.